Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and of course Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly, the films Obsession, Blue Heron, and Blue Film.
Obsession is a horror movie, and we do have so many of these nowadays. This one has been getting rave reviews from people. I myself think it's okay. I can't share in the extraordinary enthusiasm that a whole lot of reviewers have had about this movie, but you know, it's a pretty well-done horror picture. It was written and directed by Curry Barker, and it has a very old-fashioned premise. That's one of the things I rather liked about it, because it's sort of very traditional in a way. The old idea of a wish. You get a wish. You can wish for anything you want, and then, of course, things go horribly wrong. This goes back. One of the most famous instances of this theme is in a very famous short story called The Monkey's Paw, but there are many, many other examples of it going back, I'm sure, for centuries, and Obsession is just the latest one of these. So, it's about a young man who really, really loves this young woman. I mean, he thinks she's great. His name is Bear, by the way. And he just loves Nikki so much. But he just doesn't think that she returns his feelings. And so what's he going to do about it? And then one day when he's in just a sort of a novelty shop, just without looking for anything in particular, he comes upon something called a one-wish willow. And it's a little box, and they've got a whole bunch of these. It's just like a commercial product. The box looks sort of like one of those boxes that you get Halloween sparklers in. And the whole thing looks like it's sort of about that level of seriousness. But he buys the thing, and then on an impulse, he does what you're supposed to do, which is to break it. And then he makes his wish, and he wishes that Nikki would love him more than anybody else in the world. Okay, so that's fine. And then, of course, Nikki, who, by the way, they were just in his car, and she's going to go into her house. She suddenly turns around and comes back and starts talking to him. And the movie goes on from there. And yes, the wish worked. She is now wildly in love with Bear. And then her behaviors start to get very, very bizarre. And that's where the whole horror part of the movie comes from. So it's kind of interesting to me because we don't really understand why Nikki changes her whole behavior. It's not just she falls in love with Bear. Hey, Bear, I love you. Please kiss me. And, you know, let's get married. It's not that sort of thing. It's that she starts to have wild mood swings. And she starts to really act in totally irrational ways and do strange things. And this is maybe connected with her love for him. I guess it must be, because that's what the movie seems to be about. But it's really not clear why it would be like this. So the movie definitely has this very powerful supernatural element, the one wish willow, after all, which grants you a wish. And then, of course, as the movie goes along, we see Bear trying to find some way out of the situation, which turns out to be much more difficult than you might expect. He asks for help from his friend Ian, but things don't really go the way they had hoped either. But along with the supernatural element, which kind of fades away after a while. I mean, once the wish has worked and she's in love with him and things are going on from there, the supernatural part of it fades away. And it really just seems to me that she starts acting with like somebody who is psychotic. And the movie to me was sort of a very melodramatic story of a psychotic woman doing bizarre, irrational, and ultimately exceedingly violent things in a way that really connects up with the supernatural premise of the story, but doesn't really follow directly from it. So the movie after a while turned into, for me, a kind of a distasteful story of a psychotic woman who is having terrible troubles keeping her behaviors and her thoughts in check and does all kinds of horrifying things. And then a poor guy who is trapped in the situation, even though he caused it, he is ultimately basically just sort of trapped in it and wants to do something about it. But as I already mentioned, it's not as easy as he might have hoped it would be. And He asks for help and he tries for help. And the old idea of can you make another wish? Well, okay, no, that's not how this thing works. And the movie is kind of amusingly plugged into today's kinds of ways that things work on the internet. He looks for help on the internet. He can't find it. He calls up the phone number that's on the box. If you have any trouble with this product, get in touch with us. And they are no help at all. Well, can I reverse the wish? It really doesn't work like that, that kind of thing. And as I've said, he asks his best friend Ian for help, and that really goes in a very strange and sort of amusing direction. But ultimately, this is a horror movie, and so most of the things that happen are pretty darn horrific. So I would call Obsession a reasonably effective horror movie. Again, it has, especially as you get into the last part of it, some really, really, really horrible violence. But up until then, it's just sort of a wish gone wrong story, very, very old-fashioned kind of a story in some ways, in other ways, a very modern kind of a story. The internet's in there and everything else. And I had a kind of a mildly diverting time watching it. It's an okay horror movie. I am not obsessed with Obsession. Blue Heron is a very, very different kind of a movie, much gentler, much more indirect, although it sort of has some elements in it that you might call sort of horrific in certain respects themselves. It's very, very, very much a memory movie. It was written and directed by Sophie Rambari, who is known before now mainly for a number of short films that she made, which are very, very worthwhile looking at. And this is very much a story based on her own memories. She has talked about this. It's not an impersonal film. It's a film which is very, very personal to her. It's called Blue Heron, partly because you see a blue heron now and then in the movie, and because parts of it take place just sort of not very directly at a nature preserve devoted to the blue heron. So that's why it's called that. But it's not about birds. That's for sure. So the main character is a girl named Sasha. By the end of the movie, she's become a woman. Sort of we flash forward after a while. But most of the movie, she's an 8-year-old girl, and her name is Sasha. And the movie takes place in the 1990s. And she and her family are from Hungary, but they moved to Vancouver Island in Canada. And the parents, you never find out their names, but they're good parents. They really want to do right by their kids. They have two young boys named Henry and Felix. And then there's an older kid who comes from an earlier marriage of the mother, and his name is Jeremy. And he becomes a very, very important part in this. So much of the movie has to do with 8-year-old Sasha's memories of her family, especially her brother Jeremy, who is many years older than she is. And there's something going on with Jeremy, which is not good. He is mentally troubled. Mentally challenged, you might say, not in the sense of being slow to think, but in the sense of being troubled, difficult, obviously tormented in some internal ways, which are now manifesting themselves in his outward behavior. The family tries to cope with this. The father's home a lot. He does some sort of work that involves being on the computer a lot, but he can't really do it because he's kind of busy. The mother is partly exasperated with the father for spending so much time on his computer doing his work. She's also got to look after the other kids, and sure, she doesn't have full time to devote to Jeremy, although both parents do their best. But as time goes on, Jeremy becomes stranger and stranger in his actions and in his thoughts and just in the way he is. And the parents realize they got to do something about this, but they don't know what to do about it. It's possible that today things would be a bit better, but probably not. This is back in the 1990s, and I don't think things have changed all that much with this kind of situation. So the parents try various ways of getting help for Jeremy, and nothing seems to really do the trick. And there are some real crisis moments. At one point, Jeremy is up on the roof of what appears to be the garage, and they're really afraid that he might jump off, which would cripple him or kill him. Also, it turns out that he has actually said things about burning down the house that they all live in, and he actually keeps a little bit of gasoline in his bedroom. That's really scary for everybody. So you have things like this. This is not just a kid who is unhappy. This is a kid who is unhappy and possibly dangerous. And he gets in trouble for some minor things like stealing something out of a store and things like that. But things build and build and build. And we have much of this movie through the eyes not necessarily through the eyes, but definitely from the perspective of 8-year-old Sasha. Then near the end of the movie, in the later part of the movie, we jump way into the future when Sasha is now a young adult and she is making a movie about this. And this is obviously when we realize, if we haven't realized it already, that this whole movie is very much based on memories of the filmmaker Sophie Rambari. And they're not fully processed memories. The movie is sometimes hard to follow. It jumps around a bit. Things are sort of half shown, half alluded to, half suggested, the way they might be remembered by somebody who was 8 years old when the whole lot of this stuff happened. So the movie is very effective in getting across that sort of feeling of being based very much on childhood memories now being processed through the thoughts of an adult filmmaker. It's a really interesting movie. I don't think it's 100% successful. This is another film which has gotten rapturous reviews from many, many reviewers. I don't feel rapturous about it. But I feel it's a very serious and very beautifully and carefully and cautiously made art movie. And I really do recommend it. It's well worth looking at, especially if you're interested in what it's like to be a child, what it's like to be a child in a troubled family, and what it's like to have a sibling, or maybe to be a young person, a young boy with really serious mental problems. It deals with that in a very sensitive and non-sensationalistic way. And for that, I salute Sophie Rambari and her movie Blue Heron. And finally, a movie which has the interesting name of Blue Film. I just talked about Blue Heron, and now I'm going to talk about Blue Film. And this is kind of an interesting movie. And once again, the reviews for this movie have been very, very good. I think it's a good picture. Not a masterpiece or anything like that, but it's a very worthwhile movie. So, Blue Film starts out in a way that appears to be very melodramatic. We have a young man. We soon find out that he's an internet porn guy, is basically what he is. His name is Aaron. That's the name he goes by, Aaron Eagle. And he has a gay following. He's very, very gay. And he shows his naked butt. And he talks really tough to his followers and demands that they send in money and stuff like that. And then he bullies them and he cajoles them. So he's a kind of a very aggressive internet bro with a gay following. Then in the next part of the movie, that's just the very beginning, we see him doing this right into the camera, as if we were watching him on our own computers. He shows up at a house where he's gotten a really, really generous offer. He's going to be paid a tremendous amount of money if he can let this older guy make a video of him. The older guy's name is Hank. So we have Aaron, the young internet porn guy, showing up at the house of Hank, an older man who is wearing a ski mask over his head that completely obscures his face. So it looks like something really sinister is going to happen here. Well, I'll only reveal what happens in the first parts of the movie. It turns out that Hank, the older guy, is not nearly as sinister as he seems. Eventually, he takes off his mask, and eventually, it turns out that he was years ago a middle school teacher who had Aaron in his class and was totally in love with Aaron. Now, Hank, the older former middle school teacher, it turns out, actually did have a sexual encounter with another middle school kid and spent years in jail for that. Now he's out. He's no longer a teacher. He works bagging groceries at a store very far away from where this movie takes place. And he has gotten Aaron to come to his place, to the house that he's renting for a little while, so that he can make a movie of Aaron. And his whole motivation is to find out whether he is still in love with Aaron, and if so, whether they could have any kind of relationship now. Now, that's what Blue Film is about. I must say right now that Blue Film is a talkathon. It is almost entirely all talk. These two, Hank and Aaron, the older guy and the younger guy, spend a very, very long night together. And yes, there is some sex that takes place during it, but Hank is no longer young, and it doesn't appear to be very successful sex, and we don't really see much of it. This is not a sex movie. It's all about sex, but sex doesn't happen much in it, and we see even less than I'm suggesting here. It's mainly talk, talk, talk. Seems to be a vogue right now for talkathons. I've seen more than one movie like that recently, but this is definitely one of those. And it gets very much into all kinds of issues about why is Aaron so arrogant and so aggressive and so angry, it seems, in the videos that he makes. Why is Hank now still trying to get in touch with him and strike up some kind of rapport with him decades after, well, not decades, but many, many years after that initial love affair, which appears to have been pretty much one-sided anyway. So it's an interesting movie. It's not about a subject that interests me. I'm not particularly interested in the older guy, younger guy, gay relationship, what happened, what didn't happen, what's going to happen, what isn't going to happen. But it's just really well acted. Kieran Moore is very good as Aaron Eagle, and Reed Birney is just terrific as the older guy, Hank. They are almost the only two characters in the movie, and I had a good time watching them develop their characters, develop their performances. So again, if you're not interested in that subject of the sort of May-December gay relationship that never quite worked out and probably never will quite work out, if you're not interested in that, you probably won't be interested in all this talk, talk, talk that takes place in this movie. But I found that a sensitively done movie, a movie made with a lot of obvious sincerity of heart, and a very well-acted movie, especially by Reed Birney. So Blue Film, I found to be a pretty good film. And that is my partly blue story this week.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films Obsession, Blue Heron, and Blue Film.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.